You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Randy Robbins. Randy, thanks for joining us again.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for speaking with me.
Randy, just to let the listeners know who you are, we spoke a couple of weeks ago, right after this incident that we're discussing unfolded. And you are the father of Lindsey Gann, and she was the person attacked by a bunch of black people over at the ballpark in the parking lot. And, of course, the listeners can, if they haven't already done it, listen to that first interview that was done with you and primarily with your son-in-law, Lindsey's husband, Jeremy Gann. So, like I said, if they haven't done it, then they can get up to speed and listen to that and then come back and listen to this one. This interview is a follow-up to that because a lot of stuff has happened since the attack happened, and we want to go into that. Before we do, Randy, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are? I know that we did that on the last interview. We really only spoke for a few moments, so
sure.
Please say whatever you'd like.
Sure, Dave. Yeah, my name's Randy Robbins, and I'm the father of Lindsey Gann, the victim of the attack. And first of all, I just want to thank you, Dave, for reporting on Lindsey's story. Few people have had the courage to bring this story to light. It has been reported in the local media, but you are one of a few people out front to get the word out nationally on what has happened to her, and I appreciate you following up. Lindsey is my middle daughter, and she lives in Topeka, Kansas. And those who have read the story before would know that she was attacked at the baseball diamond where she did coach. And after a bullying incident on June 9th, where she had confronted some children about bullying, the next night, some parents attacked her in the parking lot. Four people attacked her while a group of people surrounded them and shouted racial slurs. And Lindsey was badly beaten and taken to the hospital. The police failed to investigate the night of the incident, and we pressed the issue with the police department, and 5 days later, they sent a Detective Iams out to speak with Lindsey and take some pictures, but they absolutely just, we feel, dropped the ball. They just did not investigate the night of the incident. Lindsey has been in contact with the district attorney very frequently, and as of about a week ago, they had informed her that they'd planned to press misdemeanor charges against at least a couple of individuals, and she had inquired as to why misdemeanor charges, and they told her frankly that she didn't have any broken bones. And she told him about the ongoing problem with her neck and the previous injury to her neck, and that she would not have an opportunity to follow up with the doctor who is in Kansas City that she had seen. He was the surgeon on the prior accident. She has some screws and pins in her neck, and she's awaiting a visit with that doctor to see what they can do for her. But the DA told her that they thought that it would be easier to get a conviction on misdemeanor charges than a felony. Well, let's see, it would have been Friday, the 24th of June. Lindsey had a meeting scheduled with the district attorney, and I was there to attend that meeting as well, where we wanted to discuss with them why the misdemeanor charges, so forth. Well, about 30 minutes before that meeting, Lindsey received a call that they needed to cancel or postpone it, and said that they had received new evidence from the Topeka Police Department that they needed to review, and that they would get back with her the following week. And Lindsey started calling them the next week, which would have been this past Monday, calling them each day, and got no return call, no response. I called the DA, Chad Taylor's office, to see if I could discuss it with him and find out when we could set another meeting, because we were seeking answers, and called a couple of times and got no response back whatsoever, no phone call, nothing. Then yesterday, Friday, July the 1st, we saw a news story reported by WIBW in Topeka reporting that misdemeanor charges were announced against two individuals, Monice Webster and a Michaela Ray. And Webster was the individual that you might know from the previous story, slammed Lindsey in the pickup door, and then there were a total of four people that beat her after that. It's really been an incredible journey so far. It seems that at every turn, everything we've tried to find out, there's been some sort of minimization and damage control, cover-up, call it whatever you will, but we've had a real difficult time getting answers and getting people to do the right thing.
Tell the listeners about the phone calls you received and why that's problematic.
Well, I suppose it started with angry Facebook posts. I'd started a GoFundMe page for Lindsay because they didn't have any insurance at the time of the incident. Jeremy had just started a new business, and they were in the process of getting some new health care insurance, and it wasn't in force at the time of this accident. And I posted my phone number, probably a mistake, in the GoFundMe page and on Facebook in a couple locations seeking information because the police stated that there were no independent witnesses the night of the event, which is absolutely incorrect. So as a result of that, I was attacked repeatedly, just numerous times, by people on social media calling me a racist and how dare I call this a hate crime, just a number of things. Then I received probably approximately 3 different phone calls, anonymously, of course, on my cell phone. And the one that concerned me most was the most recent one where a male voice said, "You better not return to Topeka, punk." And I take that as a direct threat, just beside myself, how far this has gone and no action's been taken by the authorities and how they've tried to just completely cover up the whole issue and try to turn it into, as they called it initially, a mutual combat event. It was anything but that, but I had a female individual called me and just berated me and used several profane words. I don't even want to go into those really, Dave, but...
Was she black?
Yeah, from the tone of her voice, I gathered she might be. She accused me of being a racist and inciting huge racial division and trying to shame me for telling the truth and trying to bring the truth out. So at this point, we've been trying to help Lindsay and Jeremy as much as possible. They are afraid for their safety and don't want to remain in their home. They're considering getting well outside of Topeka or possibly even out of the state. The children are traumatized. They can't play out in the yard. They just don't feel safe in their home. Just been a bad experience for them all the way around. It kind of reminds me of folks I know that have PTSD after serving in combat. This experience has changed them. On a recent visit up there, I think I may have shared that Braden, my grandson, slept near me, and I woke up to find that he had went to the garage and went through his camping supplies and was sleeping with his hunting knife. He's just afraid for his family. It's something a 10-year-old should never have to experience.
And you did mention that he was sleeping with the knife, and then you moved it away.
Yes.
And then what happened?
Well, and then I woke up again early in the morning, and he had the knife back, clutching it to his chest. When he woke up, we talked about it and discussed it, and he shared that he was afraid for his family and that he would never let anything like this happen to his mother ever again.
Wow. These animals. I wasn't even involved in it, and I'm still riled up about it. I don't even know you. I don't know your daughter. I don't know Jeremy. I don't know anybody, but it's horrible what these savages did and continue to do, and all anybody has to do is just open up their eyes and go on the internet and take a look, and you'll see the stories because they're all over the place. And there's a renewed sense of savagery, it seems, and many people have said what you said on the last interview, that you've never seen the vitriol here coming from these so-called black leaders, including the guy who's in the White House right now. It's horrible. It's open season on whites. That's what it is. And the guy doesn't even hide this fact that that's what's happening. We talked about the anonymous calls, and we did mention the police not conducting proper investigation, and they even admitted that, right?
Yes, I called and I left a message with everybody in the police department, but I believe it was the assistant chief who called me back and we discussed it. I told him that I was familiar with Manny Munoz, was the supervising officer on the scene, an individual we'd known for many years and trusted, frankly. And at the scene, as Lindsay was being taken away in an ambulance, he told my son-in-law, Jeremy, something to the effect of, "We need to get out of here before this flares up again." And that just led me to believe that perhaps the police are afraid. They patrol that area, and it's an area that's full of subsidized housing, which is one of the areas where the crowd of people ran to when police started arriving. And so I think maybe they're afraid they have to patrol that area and feel like maybe they didn't really want to investigate it. Lindsay lives some distance away in another neighborhood.
They're afraid of what's going to happen because they showed the country what they could do in Ferguson and Baltimore decades and decades before the Watts riots in Newark, New Jersey. So this is just a fact of life here, that when certain black people feel like they can get away with it, or I guess that's the way they express themselves. I don't know. I mean, I don't go around throwing bricks through windows or throwing Molotov cocktails when I'm unhappy, but certain people do. So yeah, I can understand why they're afraid, but that still doesn't relieve them of their duty, what they do in their job. Their job is to do what's right, and they certainly didn't do what was right for Lindsay. Somebody came over to Lindsay and Jeremy's home.
Yeah, that would have been approximately at least maybe 2 weeks prior on a Friday, and that would have been a lady by the name of Adina Mayhew. Lindsay considered Miss Mayhew as she'd known her personally, and they had mutual friends over a period of time, and I was present. She introduced herself as the executive vice president of the TBSA.
Let me just tell the listeners that that stands for the Topeka Baseball and Softball Association. Go ahead, Randy.
Correct. And she was with another individual who was also on the board and said that she was there on behalf of the board to investigate the incident and make recommendations back to the board. And she proceeded to kind of interview Lindsay and get her side of the story. And I could tell as we sat there that it was just very clear that she wasn't disclosing a lot of things and that she maybe had some other agenda. Just her body language. I had asked her and inquired about the adult male who was involved in the attack by the name of Tyrell Reed. And she was familiar with Mr. Reed, and I asked her if she was familiar that he had warrants at the time of this incident, and she tried to avoid addressing that whatsoever, and she started to say, well, actually, and I said, please go ahead and tell me what you were going to say, and she cut it off. So I could tell then that this was maybe more damage control for the TBSA than anything else. We had noticed previously that in one of the initial interviews done by local TV station WIBW that the TBSA had made it a point to state that the attack occurred off of the Dornwood Park property. It occurred in a parking lot adjacent to the Ball Diamond, which has been used ever since I can recall as a kid for parking for the Ball Diamond. It was an old school that had closed years ago, the Hudson School, and the parking lot is the closest parking facility to the furthest Ball Diamonds. It's really one of the only places to park if you're playing on these particular diamonds, and has been used as parking for the diamonds for many, many years. But I found it odd that one of their first statements they released was that the incident happened off property or outside of the park. So I kind of had an idea that they were early on going to try and minimize some of what happened, perhaps.
And you were right. You want to tell the listeners about what happened with the firearm?
Well, yes. Let me back up just a little bit. Early on, they received a call from Senator Anthony Hensley of Kansas, and in a conversation with Jeremy, he said, well, you need to do what you need to do to take care of your family, and if you return to the ballpark, it is legal to carry at that Ball Diamond, and by all means, carry your sidearm with you. Jeremy is a licensed concealed carry holder, as is my daughter, Lindsay. And so during the interview with Miss Mayhew, Lindsay told her that she was really scared and that if he was to return to the Ball Diamond, she would be carrying her legal firearm with her. And it was at that point that Miss Mayhew made several remarks, one of which was something to the effect of, there won't be any firearms at my Ball Diamond. And I interjected a statement at that point to inform her that the way it currently existed, that was not a place that was prohibited to carry. There was no signage indicating that. And in fact, I was at the Ball Diamond less than a week before the incident occurred. I was up visiting and watching one of my grandson Braden's games, and I sat in the stand with my firearm. So this would have turned out very differently had this occurred on the night of my visit.
That would have been nice. They wouldn't have been so brazen. Then again, there's also the possibility that it could have erupted, but probably not.
Yes.
What ultimately happened with Lindsay and the TBSA?
Well, after the interview with Miss Mayhew, a day or so later, there were some text messages exchanged where Mayhew advised that, I believe, suspension had been recommended for Monice Webster, as well as Tyrell Reed, the adult male who is yet to be charged with anything. And they also announced that Lindsay would be suspended as well. All of these suspensions are only in force until the end of this baseball season. My way of thinking, it should have been a lifetime suspension for these individuals. Lindsay should have never been suspended. She didn't do anything wrong, Dave, and that's the sad part of this whole thing. The only thing that I can think of was that she told Mayhew that she wouldn't return unless she was armed. And we understand we do have friends inside the TBSA that stated that they recommended suspensions and different actions, but the TBSA attorney interjected and shut down a lot of the things that they had recommended. And we have the email documenting it from Mayhew, said that Jeremy was not suspended and would be welcome to return to the Diamond and his team and his son. And of course, Jeremy had no plans to return after this happened to his wife.
Why would he? She gets beat up by four or five savages and she gets suspended?
Yeah, it was, all accounts were four individuals total that were on her, and then 20 or more surrounding them chanting. And Lindsay was issued a suspension. She's as shocked as I over this whole thing.
Wow.
They interviewed the other folks as well, and from the information we got, they were told by the attackers and others that Lindsay had used a racial slur against the children who were bullying the night before the attack. Well, it's just patently false. There's absolutely no truth to that whatsoever. In fact, as soon as Lindsay broke up the bullying, she went back to the bench to return to the game and sat down between two of her black friends who were within earshot of the entire incident. And some of them, frankly, have been hesitant to get involved, and I understand why. But the entire incident was in view of a number of people, and Monice Webster then came and confronted Lindsay about disciplining her child or children and was threatening to fight her at that point. Lindsay defused the situation, and an individual with the league, James, I can't remember his last name, but we have it somewhere, was right there and commended Lindsay for defusing the situation and not getting into a fight with this lady. And that's when they thought it was all over, until the next night when they attacked her.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for explaining that. She gets beat up, she gets suspended, and these people were involved, as Jeremy explained the last time we spoke. These people have already been involved in similar incidences where they blocked people from leaving because of a call on the field. So obviously there's a history there. Mayhew and these other people know this, but they may all be fearful of some kind of an outburst from the African American or black, whatever you want to call it. It was always black. All of a sudden it became African American. You know, I guess we got to start calling ourselves whatever we are, but from the black community. And there is also some more history about this place. Isn't that right, Randy, about armed security being there at Dornwood?
Sure. And years ago, I recall actually sitting in the stands many years ago when my youngest son was playing Little League there, and I watched a violent incident erupt when a predominantly black team was playing a white team, and parents got into a brawl on the field and police arrived. But for a number of years, there was security at Dornwood Park. And our understanding is that over time, because of budget constraints and so forth, that security was removed.
This is something that I think is very important here to this story, because if in fact there was security and there was a reason, and it was a black that was the reason, and it still exists and it probably is getting worse, why wasn't it there now, even with budget cuts? That's something that the listeners should be concerned about in their own communities as well, that something like this could erupt there. I mean, if it's happening in Topeka, which a lot of people think is about as Midwest or breadbasket of the country as you can get, it's probably happening in other places. We know it is, but this is a warning, I think, to a lot of folks, especially white folks, who end up being placed in the sights of these people. They don't belong in civilized society, obviously. I know that myself. I've never done anything like that. I've never even thought about it, about jumping on somebody like that, ambushing people like that. And there's something wrong here. And before more people get hurt, that some people face the reality of this and call a spade, so to speak. We discussed something earlier about U.S. District Attorney Barry Grissom, U.S. Attorney in the District of Kansas. Last July, he was in the news. Why don't you tell listeners about that, Randy?
Well, Dave, from what I recall and read, he had done a story with, I believe it was KSNT Topeka, addressing the gang violence in Topeka, and talked about how they had made some felony arrests, and I think there was a video associated with it of him speaking. But Topeka is no stranger to gang violence. There is a lot of gang activity in Topeka, and this has been going on for a long time there. But I think things are actually getting worse in the last few years. We actually moved from Topeka about 15 years ago because we saw a number of violent things occur. And Shawnee County, I guess, is noted as a sanctuary city. And we started to really see a deterioration in level of lawlessness. Two people were murdered, shot point blank in the head, two doors down from where we lived. And we had made a decision then that it was time to get out of Topeka. But this U.S. attorney had stated he was working with the Shawnee County District Attorney to try and address the gang violence problem in Topeka.
If it came to the attention of the United States government that they felt it necessary to get involved, then obviously it's been festering for a while. What happened to Lindsay and you and her whole family, her extended family, it's horrible. But the reality is that they have a business, and the show must go on, right?
Yeah, you know, the business has suffered. Jeremy needed to take a little bit of time off to take care of Lindsay, and he had to basically turn over some of his work to some other individuals who were able to help him with that. And so that has suffered, and Lindsay was an integral part of the business as far as scheduling and all those type of things, scheduling work and arranging logistically different things, and hasn't been able to do that. I've been trying to assist them. They've been trying to find one attorney to represent them. She placed a call to an attorney that our family had a relationship with for a number of years and didn't receive even a return call. And we found that many of the attorneys in the area are frankly apprehensive about even talking about this type of case.
That's disheartening. I want to send out a message to anyone who's listening who might be an attorney, might be somebody who works with an attorney, somebody who knows an attorney. If you're in the area in Topeka and you want to do what's right, look up Randy or Jeremy or Lindsay. It shouldn't be too hard to find, considering what happened, and you're on Facebook.
And I appreciate that, Dave. Anything that we can do to help find him an attorney, would be very grateful, because there's just a lot of ongoing issues, and I want to see the justices served for Lindsay and Jeremy and my grandchildren.
How seriously are they considering picking up their stakes and getting out of Topeka?
Well, no, they're already packing, even as we speak. They are packing, and they've expressed to me that there's no doubt they are moving. They have contacted a realtor to attempt to sell the home that they live in. So they are moving. It's trying to find a place to rent to move to while they sell the home and then try and go from there.
They don't even want to wait. They want to get out fast.
No, they're traumatized over this whole incident. Lindsay won't go to the grocery store or out by herself. I have friends that have suffered PTSD that have been in combat, and that just reminds me of that. She doesn't feel safe in her neighborhood, in her home, and they've expressed that they want to move immediately, and are working towards that.
That's sad. That, how long have they been in that home?
Oh, gosh, Dave, a number of years now. My mother had actually built the home, and she has since moved to Florida, but she sold the home to them, and it was a very nice home, and they had renovated it and made it comfortable. And Jeremy is, like I said, he's an electrician. He's also a carpenter, plumber. He can do about all of that, and he remodeled the home and made it a comfortable, nice home for them, and they're willing to give that all up and go move into uncertainty just to get out of there.
Wow. Again, I'm so sorry about what happened to your family, to you. It is like PTSD. The smallest things, traumatic events that happen to people, getting stopped by a cop for speeding for some people is traumatic, especially if they had never been stopped. These type of things can stay with people for a long time, and hopefully someone will step up to the plate, Randy, an attorney, an officer of the court, come forward, try to reach out to you. Lawyers are not allowed to actually solicit customers. But maybe if somebody knows a lawyer that they think might be interested in helping these nice folks get justice.
I do just want to thank you again for taking an interest in this and not letting this go and helping us get the facts and the true story out there. There's been a lot of things said that were absolutely inaccurate or untrue and mischaracterizations and so forth. So it's been really refreshing, and we so much appreciate you and everything you've done to help get Lindsay's story out.
I really appreciate that, and that's the way it's supposed to be, at least I thought it was, growing up, that the media is supposed to do these kind of things, and something happened along the way, I guess, from when you and I were kids to now, but I really do appreciate you saying that, and I'll do whatever I can to help expose the truth, and as I told you before, I happen to know a lot about black-on-white crime phenomenon that's been going on for hundreds of years, actually. I've studied it that far back, so this isn't something new, it's just more brazen and violent now, it seems. And thank you so much for taking the time explaining all this to the listeners, and hope that we can talk real soon and get another update on this.
Absolutely, Dave. I thank you, and God bless you.